I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
To the Scotsman. Today we're going to be talking about Utah State Gymnastics and their first match under first-year head coach Kristen White. We'll take a look at the transfer portal as Blake Anderson tries to restock the football team on the rebound. Kayla Ard's women's basketball team falls to 3-10 after a pair of losses to open up conference play. On the other side, the men's basketball team just keeps rolling, wins against Fresno State and Air Force to open up Mountain West play. But first, this news came down just a couple of hours ago. J.C. Carroll's jersey retirement ceremony, and be really clear, it's not a number retirement. It's a jersey retirement. Yes. People could still wear the number. Saturday, February 18th, number 20 hanging in the rafters of the Spectrum forever. He is Hu Tran. I am Brian Priest. You're listening to The Scotsman, a KSLSports.com joint. Not to be confused with anything like Spike Lee
Spike
related.
Lee, yep, yeah,
not at all. But who? How are you doing today, man?
J.C. Carroll. I'm pretty sure that's how the PA announcer used to do it back in the day. Or at least I remember. I mean, so like, we're talking about J.C. Carroll first. You and I were Aggies when J.C. Carroll was there.
Heyday, 2005 to 2008. And we were both up there in Logan. Yeah, and He was right. Something to watch.
Like, I mean, I got to see the first couple years of JC. You got to see the tail end, and JC was like, it's so weird to watch him. Like, going, you know, I don't think he's an NBA player, but he's definitely got some really great skills. He was an amazing college player. Like, he wasn't Jimmer Fredette, but man, the way he could still shoot the ball and just run off screens, watching him was a real treat as an Aggie fan.
He was a Jimmer Fredette, but I would argue, and I'll die on this hill against any BYU fan, I would argue that he was a better professional basketball player than Jimmer Fredette ended up being, NBA or otherwise.
I don't know. Is Jimmer's China career going pretty well? Because JC's his Spanish career, right?
It's EuroLeague. It's the next best league in the world. And JC won two championships, two scoring titles. Mm-hmm. He played in four championship games. Right. And Jimmer Fredette's lighting up China.
Yeah. I mean, JC was such a joy to, like I said, watching him play basketball. Like, again, when you're watching Utah State basketball, you know, you're not looking for a national championship team. But, you know, the goalposts are way different when you're watching, at that time, a Big West team. You know, you're looking for a team that can, hey, can we win the tournament and, you know, go into the 12th seed maybe and win. Sweet 16 is probably a fair goal for about, I mean, even now, Utah State. So a Sweet 16 would be a great goal for them.
Sweet 16 was a pipe dream.
Yeah.
I remember these days, and we had some fun teams with Spencer Nelson and Nate Harris and, you know, the glory days of Stu Morrill.
Chaz
but
Iser,
Chaz
Spicer.
Yeah.
Chaz the Iser Spicer is what we call
it. let me ask you before we move on to start talking about the current day basketball teams, right. But do you have just a favorite J.C. Carroll memory? Because I've got a couple.
Didn't he hit a game winner against Nevada his sophomore year?
He may have. There were so many individual big shots. It's hard to pick one thing out.
I remember being oh my God, like he's running off the screen, like ball touches him, like yep, in. There's no way he's missing it.
Yeah,
he would run these curls. He's running these curls off screens on the 3-point line, Just unheard of. And I'm, you know, just catch and shoot, and just was had such a quick trigger.
Well, okay, so NBA fans who might not be old enough to remember or have watched J.C. Carroll with Utah State, if you remember J.J. Redick's style of play, yeah. Very, very similar. It was all about coming off of curls, coming off of screens, pin downs, and trying to get open that way. He didn't have the ball in his hands. He wasn't creating for himself. He was the epitome of a two-guard who just tries to create and find space and catch and shoot, I mean, and he was truly great
Redick
at
was
it.
The model for a kid, because like, they were on the same time, right? Redick was an NBA player, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think Redick was at Duke at the same
right,
time.
Yeah, so like, those guys were like more like he was a light version of, you know, yeah. the Big West version of, mm-hmm. of J.J. Redick. So, perfect example, exactly.
I remember a couple things I remember about JC. Personally, I remember one time I spent a couple of summers playing a lot of basketball at the Hyper Building up on campus.
Oh.
And there was one summer, it had to have been either after his junior or senior season, after the tournament season was over. So late March, April, you know, school's still in session, so he's still on campus. And I was up there playing just pickup ball. And JC and backup, end-of-the-bench center, Arvydas Vaitekas show
yes.
up. Do you remember Arvydas?
Okay. So my Matthew L. Glade,
producer
here, and I went to a party one time, and he was there. And, like, you know, just a regular college party. Nothing too crazy. But we're talking about, like, games that we would play out there. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, Arvydas is – he loves – the game is called Categories. You name a category, and then you have to go around in a circle, and everybody has to name something in that category.
Okay.
Like famous people. And he was like, Tom Hanks.
This is a game of imbibement.
Yes. So, anyway, like, Arvydas is there. And it'd be funny because – and my roommate Alex was there too, but they'd be like, "Oh yeah, Arvydas goes, hey, you know, like he always has the go to. He'd be like, categories, candies, Snickers, and so
it's, like, so hey, was he Count Chocula?
Yeah, like we would. But the funny thing is, I was like, for something that always stuck in my head, because we would ask him, "Hey, you want to play categories?" He goes, "Categories, candies, Snickers." And so I'm like, "Oh my god, he did it!" But yeah, so Arvydas, yes, Arvydas got very little playing time, but he's forever etched in my brain.
Oh, absolutely. Well, okay, so I have a memory with Arvydas myself. Yes. It's slightly different, but
right.
Up at the Hyper, and JC and Arvydas show up, and obviously they're going to be in the next game. Whoever was going to be on the court to take on winners ceded two spots to JC and Arvydas.
Okay, right.
And Arvydas was a 7-footer.
Right.
I've got to remind you guys. So coming up to the Hyper, this was no small thing for an Arvydas Vaitekas, even with his other physical limitations.
Yeah, right. He was big. He didn't have a lot of other ball skills.
Yeah, exactly. But what I remember about JC is we ended up beating him.
Oh.
I do remember that my team ended up beating him, but what stands out to me in particular is got out on a fast break. JC got out on a fast break, and I was the only defender back. And I just decide, okay, I'm just going to wrap him up. I'm not going to let him score. I'm not going to be dirty. I'm not going to hit him. I'm not doing anything cheap. I'm just going to wrap him up, and we're going to play a half-court set on this possession. And JC tore through me like I was a wet paper bag. Like I hadn't even touched. I tried to just grab this man bear hug style, and I didn't know what I was getting into. He ripped right through me and dunked the ball. Like I wasn't even standing there. It was a little bit emasculating.
Right. I was like, did JC ever tear his ACL in his senior year? I was trying to think.
No.
yeah, like I mean, it's obviously like you beat a 10%. JC, right? Like he's like pickup ball guys, like when they go play at the Hyper or whatever, like these guys know that, look, we're not going to go all out.
Yeah.
We're probably going to use 10% of our power to play here. But at that moment, he was like, oh, no.
Hey, I won the game. Scoreboard, JC. Scoreboard. The other one memory, and I wish I could come up with exactly what game this was. I think this was his junior year, and it was the first play of the game. JC, anybody who remembers who's playing based on our descriptions today, he was a shooter. He was all about getting open and hitting shots. JC didn't go to the basket a whole lot. JC was not an above-the-rim player, save for that time at the Hyper when he dunked on me. 6'1", maybe 6'2".
Yeah.
It definitely size disadvantaged, right. And like I say, I can't remember who this game was against. I know it was a conference game. It was in January or February. It was a big game. Student section was full. The Spectrum was rocking. You know, if it seats 10,000, there was at least 9,000 there. It was nearly full. And the first play of the game, they had obviously scripted this, and JC came off of a pin down. He came from the right corner in front of the student section, if you can picture what I'm saying. Ran through a screen under the basket, cut up through the paint and the free throw line, caught another screen and curled around the wing. And could have just pulled up for a jumper, but the lane was wide open. And I'm trying to remember who the point guard was at the time. It may have been...
It wasn't Pack.
I'm thinking Chris Huber.
Okay.
But I could be wrong on the point guard. It's irrelevant.
Yes.
But so ball is right now on the left wing. JC cuts from the right wing straight to the basket and catches... the most perfect alley-oop, and it had to be a perfect alley-oop for JC to throw it down like he did. But first play of the game, first 2 points, and the Spectrum
just
absolutely exploded because it's not what you expected. JC hits a three in the corner, and people go nuts. JC hits a dunks on an alley-oop to open the game.
Right.
Just call it. Game over.
He was our favorite child, man. Like, I remember just... anytime we touched the ball, your hands were raised because like, you knew. Oh, yeah, JC was good. Good TV.
Yeah,
he was great to watch him while he was there at Utah State. So, and yeah, like I mean, like you said, after his career ended at Utah State, I think he knew like you know being a 6'1" point or a shooting guard in the NBA probably not going to work out. But I think hopefully we get to talk to him between now and the jerseys ceremony about. What was like being in Spain? From what I heard, he loved it. So he loved it, and Marie really was happy with how his career ended there. So.
Yeah. Spent more than a decade overseas before retiring. He last played in 2021 and officially retired in June of 2022. But, yeah, it's a special moment for JC and his jersey retirement at the Spectrum. Again, that's February 18th. But it'll go from one generational Utah State basketball shooter to another.
Yeah.
JC Carroll to now Stephen Ashworth.
Yeah,
Stephen Ashworth, the best three-point shooter in the country.
He's like 1%, 52%?
53%.
53%. My God. Like they played, so we recorded this on Wednesday. They played Air Force last night. Air Force tried to make a comeback in the second half, but Utah State shut it down. Ashworth with 15 points and three threes, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And
the
first two half threes were really, because he hit back-to-back threes, and we were doing the highlight, and my anchor, he told me, hey, these are the plays that we need. I go and look it up. I'm like, whoa, that's a deep three. I'm like, all right. And I go, I told you before that we started, the three that his first three against Air Force looked like his last three against Fresno. And so if you follow me on Twitter, WhoTransSuperman, hopefully I can splice those together and put those on so we can look at it because it looks very familiar. He comes on the next possession or a minute later, hits an even deeper three. As Spencer Litton called it, he said, from downtown Logan. It was really deep. I'm like, this is an NBA 3, and like, he just doesn't fly.
It's ridiculous what he's able to do, and he doesn't need much space at all. He's got, just like JC, he's got an incredibly quick release.
Yeah.
So he doesn't need a lot of space. And 53.8%. He's made 57 threes this year to lead the country. He's making just under four threes a game.
Yeah.
Like, in college, like that's unheard of in college basketball.
He's obviously scoring a lot. He's up to 16-ish points per game.
16.9 points per game. He's the fourth leading scorer in the Mountain West. He came into the week as the leading scorer.
Right.
But after a couple of games, that has fallen off a bit. But, I mean, we're talking about a backup point guard
that
is in the top five in the Mountain West in scoring. And he's also in the top five as far as assists goes. I think he's averaging 4.1 assists per game.
And this Utah State team doesn't turn the ball over a lot.
No.
Like, they turned it a lot over, I want to say Fresno, but Fresno's a very, I mean, let's also talk about Fresno beating New Mexico, so no longer undefeated team in the Mount West.
And huge. Did you have a chance to watch that at all?
I did not get a chance to watch it.
Fresno State's good. I mean, you know, Utah State played them, obviously, right, at home on New Year's Eve. But they looked like a different team. Jamar Baker definitely looked more comfortable as he comes back from the injury and just goes through his rehab with Fresno State. But that game being down in Fresno, New Mexico has some really talented players, but depth is where the question
Talk about like that big game in February against New Mexico. Well, the Aggies probably just had a big game against Fresno that we didn't really know about.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That win looks a lot better after, you know. And again, we're talking about the Mountain West eating each other, so we'll see in a few more weeks to see who really is the cream of the crop. But so far, those wins look pretty good for Utah State. 2-0 in the Mountain West right now.
Well, and talking about this schedule just a little bit briefly, one thing as I was looking through things today is I noticed that we only play New Mexico. I say we, like you and I are on the team. Utah State only plays New Mexico once this year, and it is, in fact, in Logan.
Okay.
So
wow.
Utah State gets that schedule benefit of not having to travel down to play in the pit, one of the most difficult environments, not only in the Mountain West, but in the country.
I was impressed about Utah State's New Year's Day crowd. You know, the student section wasn't super full, but it had a good amount.
But the rest of the
building was really good.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, so for a New Year's Day game, it was the middle of the afternoon. On that was a Sunday, right? So Sunday in Logan, I was like, okay, that's impressive. Because then I watched like the couple highlights from Fresno, New Mexico, and no offense to Fresno, like it was not nearly that full. You know, on a regular, you know, Tuesday or Thursday, it was Tuesday night. So I'm like, okay, and so yeah, right. Like, so we're talking about Utah State's home court advantage. It's back, and so I expect the next couple weeks for these Utah State games to be super loud and super full as soon as the students get back into town.
Absolutely. A couple more things about the men's basketball team. Dan Akin coming off of the bench. He also joined the 1,000-point club recently.
He did have a dunk.
Dan Akin's, he always manages to have a dunk. I think it was against Fresno State. He came in the first 7 minutes of play. He had 6 points and seven rebounds. He comes off of the bench. He's usually the first stoppage. He replaces Trevin Dorius and comes in and plays about 7 to 10 minutes right there in that stretch for the Aggies. And Akin's energy in those moments, it seems like the Utah State always is able to build a little bit of a lead during those times.
Dorius has like this big, really big body, right? Like he's there. Like it's not Arvidas' body, but like he's got some skills too.
He's improved a lot, but he's not. You know, you're not going to build an offense around Trevin Dorius.
He knows his strength, and they build his strength, right? Like, you know, he'll catch a couple easy dunks here and there, but Dan Akin coming off the bench is almost a little bit a different type of player, more athletic. And I was like, all right, yeah. Like I was like, oh boy, this guy. I mean, the dunk he had last night. Like he just took a guy off the gym, like, oh, he just found the lane wide open and just drove to the basket. Like, okay, cool. So
yeah,
from three, just he was like, all right, cool, all right, we'll take it. So, I think Utah State basketball looking pretty good about the last couple of games.
One thing to watch for with this Aggie team that I'm going to be keeping an eye on is this is a team built around the 3-point shot. Mm-hmm. You know, they make the most threes in the country. They're one of the best shooting teams percentage-wise in the country. But teams have started to try and take that 3-point shot away. They only had 12 3-point attempts against Air Force last night. So that's just something I think to keep an eye on, see how defenses are going to be attacking them. How does Utah State adjust? Do they start going more inside? And they dominated in the paint against Air Force, but Air Force is also has a roster filled with freshmen and sophomores, so it was a very young, inexperienced physical team against the Aggies. Can they do the same on Saturday against Boise State.
What is Quinn Snyder doing nowadays? Can we get the blender going?
Somebody call Quinn.
Yeah, somebody see. And then you just mentioned Boise. That's a big game. Big game coming up.
Huge, huge game.
Boise, right?
Yes, going to Boise.
That's the first big test, really, for the Mountain West. So.
Yep, yeah, Boise State, 11-4, 1-1 in the Mountain West. But if you remember the Aggies' non-conference schedule, they really didn't go on the road. They played one true road game against Seattle. Right. That went to overtime, and they ended up winning. But that game against Air Force last night, as we record on Wednesday, it was only their second true road game of the season. So it'll be a real test.
They've been on the road, just not like not in enemy territory.
Is it still Taco Bell Arena? Do you have any idea? I haven't been to Boise in years.
No. Like you said that, I was like, oh, boy, yeah, like, I don't know. When was the last time I had to care about Boise basketball? So
no need. Hey, let's move on to the Utah State women's team. Mm-hmm. They dropped their first two in Mountain West play, falling to 3-10. And Kayla Ard, again, in this rebuilding season, it's just, you know, it's really difficult. She's got a few older players, you know, graduate guard. Maria Cavallo led the team with 15 points in a loss against Air Force. And then you had Mason Kimball, another grad player, leading the team with 10 points and 7 rebounds in a more than 30-point loss against San Diego State. But it's hard right now to watch this women's team and see the building blocks necessarily.
Now, I wonder if Utah, like, you know, with the transfer portal being the way it is in every sport, right? Like, if teams like this, you're not going to get recruits in from, like, high school for Utah State. So I wonder if they just need to go find some quality players that are on other teams that are not happy with their, like, playing time or whatever. Like, hey, you know, you got 1 year of eligibility left. Come to Utah State. See if you can make your mark, you know, there or something. Somebody that has maybe a red, you know, an extra year or two. But, yeah, like you said, grad transfers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, something like that. That's probably going to be how they're going to have to build for the next few years to try to get some recognition into the program.
Well, unfortunately for Utah State and Kayla Ard, you know, she's going to have, for Ard, she'll have a year in Logan under her belt. So when she goes back out on the recruiting trail, she can speak to that year in Logan and what things are about. But that benefit of the transfer portal, Utah State's a program that's primed to get better in the transfer portal and say, hey, we don't have a lot of youth that's coming up pushing for playing time, and you're graduating. We have a program that you might want to do a graduate year. If you come here, we can give you 30 minutes a night.
Yes.
And so, you know, Utah State might have a chance when they get out on that recruiting trail after this season. And it's a tough year. You don't want to write it off, of course, but it's clear that this team doesn't have a lot of postseason aspirations in 2023. And so as analysts, our job is to start looking beyond,
So that's probably what's going to happen. Like, I'm going to go, you know, use this year, get the experience, and then I'm try to find some girls that want to play and get some time and, you know, just change the scenery. So, and this will be, you know, let's start done, like, talking about how to recruit to Logan for all sports, right? Now the transfer portal is a big thing, but before it used to be like just the atmosphere, like the spectrum atmosphere. You bring a high school kid in and show them, like, hey, this happens every game, you know?
Yep.
So stuff like that. But yes, yeah.
Well, let's stay on the transfer portal note there and look at football real quick. We talked about last week, Waylon Lapuaho, the 13-game starter as a freshman, entered the transfer portal. He announced he is going to BYU, so it's going to be a huge loss for the Aggies. Big gain for the Cougars down south. Waylon, I would imagine, is going to step in there and challenge for a starting position with the Cougars offense. And on the other side of the ball, Utah State just getting destroyed in the trenches in the transfer portal. Daniel Greshick, we talked about last week, led the team with 8.5 sacks, still in the portal. He was joined by defensive end Byron Vaughns and his 56 tackles, 8.5 tackles for a loss.
Byron Vaughns could be an NFL player.
Yeah, Byron Vaughns is going to be a guy who gets a look at by NFL teams. Right, I don't know if he's a draft prospect after next season, but he's going to be in NFL training camps.
I mean, and you know, Weber State's Rashid Shaheed shows, hey, all you need to do is get a look. But
Just get some tape, man. And don't let me forget Tavion Coleman, another defensive lineman, a defensive tackle. He just announced in the last 24 to 48 hours, yep. 1 year with Utah State, 26 tackles. So a lot of rebuilding for Blake Anderson along both the offensive and defensive
and
lines.
This is where, again, the same thing we talked about Utah State women's, like transfer portal, like, okay, now you take it away. Now you go find and give it. Go find some players that are either smaller schools or in bigger schools that need more exposure. And final players to refill, but Ike Larson has announced that he is coming back. So that's a big get. That's a big get. So.
I mean, you can lose a lot of guys. You can wonder about a lot of things, but you know, with Ike Larson returning, that you have that lockdown at the back end of your defense. Somebody who knows what his job is, who can put other guys into position to succeed. And the great thing about Ike is it's not just that he's taking care of that safety position on defense. Look at what he does on special teams. Multiple blocked kicks this year. He blocked a kick and ended up with a touchdown on special teams. He's a guy who can return kicks. He's somebody who hasn't done it at the college level, but in high school was used as a gadget player offensively. This is somebody who can really help change games with a single play. So it's huge to keep Ike.
Big for Logan, because Logan, the city, because he tweeted out or Instagrammed it, like, he's staying home is what he said.
The local kid. He went to both Logan High and then graduated from Skyview.
Yeah, so this is his home. Like, this is actually, like, he, you know, a lot of kids are like, all right, like, you know, he's home. He's here. So that really helps. And so, I mean, if he continues on his trajectory, he'll be in the NFL sooner than later. But the fact that he's going to stay another year in Utah State, really good. So Blake Anderson's got a interesting task to see if he can grab some now JUCO kids or transfer portal kids to get into the program. Because like this Utah State team, you can't go back to being young. So,
no.
You got to bring some experience in now. So.
Well, and you've got a quarterback. You know, you have Cooper Laga. You have Chase Tua Tagovailoa behind him. You have Levi Williams in there as well. You have McKay Hillstead at quarterback, somebody we talked about last week. You have Robert Briggs at running back. You have Terrell Vaughn at wide receiver. You know, you have answers at some of these positions. You may not have all the depth that you're looking for, but you have some answers. You know, Brock Lane, if he can get healthy at the tight end position. And so for the Aggies, a lot of what they're going to be trying to do is supplement. You know, you fill in around the edges. You take care of these trenches, and that's why that's my biggest concern is you can have all the skill players in the world, but if you can't get to the quarterback and you can't protect the quarterback, none of it matters.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that for this summer when they're coming up here.
Well, hey, now you're the resident gymnastics expert.
Apparently. Of course, tells me that is, you know, for the digital side, Michelle Botkin. For the TV side, it's me, so that's what they tell me. So
you are just multidimensional,
right?
And
I mean, I started covering them a year and a half ago. I just fell in love with the sport. I'm like, this is amazing watching these young women do these, like, you know, like, I don't know whenever I'm going to need to do a handstand on a bar, but these girls do it on a frequent basis. I'm like, all right, well, that's a very odd skill to have, but it's amazing to watch. It's a beautiful sport. And once you start understanding, like, the scoring and how everything needs to be done, you're like, okay. And, like, once you start understanding it, it's really good. And, so we talked about – we touched on Utah State's gymnastic program last week. When we got done, we looked up and we're like, oh, there was actually some changes I had forgotten about because it was a long time ago. But, Utah State's coach from last year, Amy Smith, left to Clemson. And took six girls with her, including their freshman phenomenon, Bree Clark, and their they're all around leader, Rebecca Wells. So
this is a team that last year, for the first time ever, won the Mountain Rim Gymnastics Conference Championship. This is a team coming off one of their best seasons ever as a program, turmoil.
The best season they've ever had. They were ranked. They ended 23 in the nation, I want to say. They were the highest-ranked non-P5 team.
Well, and that's only one qualifier. Mm-hmm. If it's one qualifier, that's pretty good.
And it is Like, and so this happens to Utah State a lot. Utah State is sort of a stepping stone school.
Feeder.
You see, yeah, you see
absolutely
with,
a feeder
you see
school.
Football, you see
Craig Smith. Look at Utah
right, Craig
basketball.
Smith in Utah, yep. You know, we had Gary Anderson leave, Matt Wells leave.
Be prepared for Ryan Odom to leave the men's program.
Blake Anderson. And, you know, it didn't always work out for all those guys that left.
It doesn't always. Doesn't no, always. The grass is not always, always greener.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel like this is sort of the same situation that happened to Utah State's gymnastics. They had that great year. I mean, SDC gymnastics, they take their gymnastics pretty seriously there. So going to, wait, Clemson's not SDC.
A-10? Clemson is ACC.
ACC. Oh, so I don't know. I thought for some reason, but I said Clemson, SEC.
SEC is good, though, because Florida won the national championship last year.
So anyway, but Clemson, you know, trying to...
So you weren't wrong.
Yes.
In every way.
Yes. Clemson trying to, you know, pull and make their gymnastics program better, so they went and looked at a team that really overachieved.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the United States does have some people coming back.
12 girls coming back,
yeah,
right?
I don't know a lot about them, but they did get some transfers from, like, I want to say Penn State. I'll have to go look, actually. But they brought some girls in, so this is going to be an interesting problem for the United States gymnastics team. Can they rebuild on the fly and rebuild on what they did last year?
Well, the fun thing about this gymnastics team is they're – not really going to have any time to mess around. I don't know if that's fun or not. I like it as somebody who enjoys sports and competition, as this is a team who is going to jump into competition on Friday, January 13th against the number 28 team in the Mountain West, Southern Utah, the number 22 team in BYU, and number 3 team in, or sorry, the WGCA.
Yes.
Well, gymnastics.
Right.
So, Collegiate Association,
SUU, but BYU,
but two top 25 teams, a top 5 team, number 28 SUU, and so Utah State's going to be jumping in right off the bat, and they're going to get challenged.
That's the best of the West. It happens at the Maverick Center, so if you're interested in going and seeing the four really good gymnastics teams out there, Utah obviously sort of in a different tier than these other teams, but the other teams are on their way up, so. Yeah, it's going to be a good event. They call it a quad event, so all four apparatuses are being used at the same time. The floor.
It's a lot to take in if you go in person.
Right.
You just kind of have to wander. And
you kind of choose, like, all right, cool, right now I can watch beam.
Each team, like, they'll rotate as a team.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, like if Utah starts on the vault, they'll all do vault first.
Yeah.
While, you know, BYU's on beam. Utah's on floor and SEU on bars, whatever apparatus I didn't speak of. But yes, so it's going to be interesting to see their build because they are starting. They have some stuff that from last year, but they are starting. I mean, they hired a Pac-12 coach, assistant coach, to be their new head coach. So I'm going to do some research and see. I want to talk to some of my gymnastics friends who really pay attention to this all year round and see what they think about this new team. Like, there's a chance that it goes backwards, you know, like you would expect, you know, losing some of your best gymnasts, getting a brand new coach, but...
But there's a difference in taking a step backwards and going backwards as a program.
But there's also Utah State football from 2 years ago with, you know, like, again, we talk about Blake Anderson coming into a
Hornet's nest.
Yes, and he was quoted like, hey, if you remember the drama that happened in his hiring and... the coach that was let go before him, he came in and was like, hey, you know what, give me a chance. I know a lot of you players are not happy with what happened. Give me a chance. They gave him a chance, and he took him, you know, to the Mountain West Championship and won that thing. So, United States is going to be doing the same thing, I think. You have to go in there and like, all right, cool, hey, you know, we're not the same team that we were last year, but we got some new things that we want to try out, and, you know, the world's their oyster. And so we'll see what they can do because – a lot of new faces there. They just announced another signing. I can't remember who they announced, but it was last week. They're like, oh, yes, you know, welcome so-and-so to the team. I was like, oh, cool. So they're bringing some girls in to really compete and fight for these jobs.
Yeah, it's going to be a big season for this Utah State gymnastics team. I think the big test for Kristen White and her first season as the coach of this team is really, and it kind of goes back to what you're talking about, is you got to get the buy-in. You have to get the entire team to buy into whatever your idea of that team building method is. What are we going to rally behind? What's going to be our credo all season long? And even if, you know, these 12 returning gymnasts, even if your team and the week in, week out results maybe aren't quite as good, if you can buy in and see what the program is building toward, okay, this is what we could be next year and the year after. Right. And it's, you know, just like any goal process, it's step by step, it's incremental.
They need to look at what Utah did in the 90s. And I forget the coach's name, but at that point, he was like, we want to make sure. I mean, Utah's gymnastics program might be their, you know, no offense to Utah men's basketball or women's basketball, their second most popular program.
No, there's no doubt.
Right.
The gymnastics program is their second highest grossing program.
And like, if you can take what the spectrum gives you for men's basketball and, you know, start slowly bringing that to the gymnastics team and give people the, because I don't see people, I don't say people are looking at front runners, but when you're in college and you have
people in Utah are front runners.
when you're in Logan, Utah, and you know, you're just looking for things to do on a random school night, like you don't have homework and you want it to be fun. Gymnastic meets, you know, on Fridays or Saturday. If you can start filling that spectrum for a really good team. If you don't say gymnastics starts getting top 20 finishes year after year after year, the people will come.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can get those fans. You can start packing that. So they need to figure out a way to make sure that program gets that entire audience. And I would love to be able to talk to the coach and say, hey, you know, what are you guys' plans to get the people into the seats there? So. And maybe we will. Who knows?
Who? Where can they find you on social media?
You can find me. I'm again at who HUUTRAN Superman. That's HUUTRAN Superman. Again, I'm
beautiful
try to,
alliteration on the spelling there.
I'm gonna try to tweet out that Stephen Ashworth video today. Because I really saw it, and first thing I thought was like, wow, it's almost the exact same shot and just crazy. So, but yeah, I'll talk Utah State. We got. On KSL TV, we just got done with Rose Bowl coverage. So, you know, we're moving with J.C. Carroll's jersey retirement today and a bunch of other sports coming up, Utah Jazz. I mean, if you're following the Utah Jazz lately, crazy stuff happening with them.
Five losses in a row by a combined 15 points.
And
it's like, nuts.
Oh, and last night might have been the closest of them all, really. So.
There's no doubt about it. It was the closest.
They're a tenth of a second away from getting their wins. So, yeah.
What can you do?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I am Brian Preece. You can find me on Twitter at bpreece24. That's at BPREECE24. And then you can find my written work at kslsports.com. Doing a lot of Utah State. I liked that. That was kind of like it reminded me of booking. Like the booking.com. Yeah. I was going to say it reminded me of like a rental
or
car
Expedia
commercial.
Like,
Expedia. Yeah.
Travel companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't sue us, please. Or give us money.
Either way. If you want to give us money, I'm all for it.
Yes.
If the conversation is about a lawsuit, let's go ahead and just keep it moving.
Yep. Like, it never happened.
But yeah, find me, my written work, kslsports.com, and everything about Utah State. Reminder about gymnastics, that's going to be the Rio Tinto Best of Utah NCAA Gymnastics meet Friday, January 13th, Utah State, SUU, BYU, and Utah down in West Valley at the Maverick Center. And then coming up for the men's basketball team, they'll be at Boise State Saturday, January 7th. Unfortunately, the court is not as blue as the turf in Boise. So
unfortunately, one of the, like, depending on who you are.
So there have been some programs that are taking liberties with their courts. Illinois has a red floor.
Ooh.
The Oregon, of course, that's an interesting one.
Get off my lawn.
I don't know. I'm just saying that maybe we can experiment a little bit more with this. Men's basketball.
Put the chalupa wrap on the court. That's what I want to see.
Ooh, chalupa wrap.
It
always comes back to Taco Bell with you, doesn't it?
Put spots, like if they make a three from the taco spot, we all get tacos or something. That's what I want to see.
A Baja Fresh 5-point play?
Yeah, there we go.
Uh-huh. Okay, I got you.
A half-court Baja shot.
After Utah State plays Boise in Boise on Saturday, they come back home taking on Wyoming Tuesday, January 10th, and then the women's team facing Colorado State on Thursday, January 5th, if I'm doing the math right in my head. Nailed it. And then Boise State at home in Logan on Saturday, January 7th.
And get your tickets for the February 18th game for the JC, because that's going to be sold out.
Absolutely, yeah. J.C. Carroll, jersey retirement, not number retirement.
Jersey.
Very clear, jersey retirement. People can still wear the number. Now, we can have an off-air conversation about what the point of whatever.
Yeah. February 18th,
Utah State in the Spectrum against the Nevada Wolfpack. Get your tickets for that, the J.C. Carroll retirement ceremony. I'm going to do everything I can to be there in person because I was there for the J.C. Carroll era, and it was one of the most exciting eras of Utah State basketball, if not the most exciting in my lifetime. Plus, he destroyed me on a basketball court on one play on a fast break. Thanks for listening to The Scotsman.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.